This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at an employee seminar held on February 4, 2026 in Harrisonburg, Virginia.
About 3 hours and 15 minutes ago, in the little village of Italino, Italy, competitions began for the 2026 Winter Olympics. And over the next 3 weeks, there'll be a culmination of millions of man hours and billions of dollars spent, and 2,962 athletes from 92 different countries will compete in 116 different competitions in order to determine who or what team is best. And the best will stand at the top of the podium, and they will play their national anthem, and they will hang the gold medal around their neck, and they will bask in the glory of their peers, and for one moment in time, they will be confirmed as the best in the world at what they do. Bringing the best you. Is that the best we're talking about this morning? The one that puts us on the top of the world, the one that gains us the glory of man. More importantly, is that the best that impresses the one that created us? So today I have the job of teaching you to bring your best to work, or more hopefully, inspiring you to continue to be excellent in your job. I love sales work. When I get to work, if I could choose which hat I put on, I would always grab the sales hat. And what I love about sales work is not just the transactional part that is very necessary. If you don't have transactions and sales, after a while you won't have a job. But what I love about sales work is the relational part, learning to know the customer, finding out about the customer's personal life, who their family is, what they are buying this piece of equipment for. Is it a want? Is it a need? What are the drivers to that? How do they want to pay for it? What's their budget? And once you've established the why and the what and the how of the customer, it becomes a joy and a very simple process to close the sale. And so my salesman brain says today, if I need to convince you to be your best at work, we're going to make this very simple. We're going to talk about what is best, why you're best, and how to achieve your best. So first of all, what is best? Well, best is very simply a definitive term. It's a superlative. It is the ultimate on the scale of excellence. You cannot get better than best. You know, we all have these involuntary ranking systems that we do inside our heads. And we start out maybe down here on the bottom with worst. And then we might have bad, okay, good, better, best. And we do it because we have an intrinsic need to rank things. And we do that because we need to create order, we need to manage complexities, we need to process information in order to create opinions, preferences, and to make good decisions. And so without even knowing we do it, we rank most everything that we encounter in life. We ask you to do it here today. You have these green response forms in the back of your books. You get to rank us who stand up here on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being worst, 5 being best, according to your opinion of how we do. So if best is a definitive term, why is it so hard to define at times? Well, it's also because best is subjective. And subjective simply means that your interpretation of something, in this case the term best, is influenced on or based on your personal feelings or your opinions, your persuasions. And so the definition goes very quickly from being a definitive one to one that becomes as varied or as numerous as there are people in this room. So we all have opinions about what is best. These opinions are formed by bias, environment, taste, experience, culture, training, so many other influences in our lives. I have things that I think are the best. I like Ram trucks, Skag Zero Turns, Caribou Coffee, Coke Zero, Wicked Stick Fishing Rods. These are all things that I think are, in my opinion, the best. They're simply persuasions. You could convince me otherwise. We also have things that we hold as best that are convictions. I'm going to pick on the men here. How many of you men are married? That's close to half of you, I'd say. Of those of you that raised your hands, which one has the best wife? So first and foremost, if you raise your hand to the first question and not to the second, you're at the wrong seminar. Shane talks on relationships next, so talk to him about that. We may each confidently claim to have the best wife. I have the microphone, so I get to claim it louder than any of you. Because we are in different life situations, and our convictions are formed by our unique walks of life and our unique personal experiences. And in those types of things, many times we can all hold a different opinion, and yet we are all, in many ways, correct. Best is progressive. If you are a human, your performance is not static. Anything you do will improve with repetition, time, and experience. This is the purpose of practice. This is the result of practice. And no matter where you fall on the talent chart, you will get better at something if you keep doing it. And skill, repetition will build your skill. You're going to become more efficient. You're going to increase the quality of your work. You're going to expand your knowledge. And you're going to make yourself a more valuable asset. And that's a gift, really. If the first time you did anything in life, if the first time you picked up a violin, you were a master. If the first time you sat down at a keyboard, you could type 200 words a minute. What would be the purpose of practice? Where would that fire in your belly come from? It's a gift of God that he gives us to allow, to makes us pursue our best, and that it keeps on, we have to keep on pursuing because it's something we never really reach. Best is also regressive, and that's because we are mortals. Our best is subject to regression. Skills that are not honed will become dull. Muscles that are not used, whether mental or physical, will atrophy. It's just a fact of life. And we tend to accept this in the normal course of life as a reality. Where the challenge comes in and where the need for grace comes in is whenever these things, these skills digress that are outside of our control. You know, there's skills that are within our control that we can lose and we don't really miss them. In my youth, I spent an inordinate amount of time becoming skilled in traditional archery. And I haven't really picked up a stick and string in probably close to 20 years, and I don't doubt my reflexive shooting skills have eroded dramatically. I don't really miss it. My priorities have changed. It's not something I hold as a high priority anymore. But whenever those things, whenever other things outside of our control, illnesses, accidents, age, whatever it is, physical disabilities, when they erode our skills, that's whenever the need for grace and acceptance comes in. And one guarantee is these regressions do come, and they will probably become before we're ready to accept them as reality. And so that gives us, so we've just defined a little bit of what best is. We said it's definitive and subjective. Those are two opposite terms, and yet they're both right. We said it's progressive and regressive. Those are two opposite terms, and yet they're both right. So if best is such an elusive target, why do we pursue it? Why the struggle? Well, first and foremost, because we have a biblical injunction. Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatsoever your hand findeth to do, do it with thy might. Colossians 3:23, whatsoever you do, do it heartily as unto the Lord. 1 Corinthians 10:31, whatsoever you do, do to the glory of God. These verses call us to wholehearted, a diligent effort. There's no room here for passiveness, for lackadaisical effort, for laziness, for shirking. All three of these verses have one word in common, and that's whatsoever. What is whatsoever? What does whatsoever include? What's everything? There's nothing outside of whatsoever. God is calling us to passion and in every area of our life. And when all we do is done with all our might and is done heartily as unto the Lord and is done to the glory of God, not only will we be performing at our best, but we will also, the Lord will also bless our efforts, and he will multiply the impacts of that as well. When we do our best, we glorify God. When we do our best, we are being good stewards of what God has given us in our abilities. We do our best as an act of gratitude to the one who gave us our talents and as a way to let our light shine before men. Why do we do our best? Because we are accountable. Not only are we accountable to God, we're accountable to our fellow men. We're accountable to our bosses, our fellow our co-workers, to our customers, to onlookers. You know, our employment is a very simple transactional agreement at its core. We have this entity called time. We don't know how much time we have. We know how much we have had, and we know we have this moment right now. We do not know how much we have left. But God gives us the autonomy to choose to do what we want to do with our time. And many of us choose to sell that time in blocks of hours, days, weeks, whatever it is, to somebody else at a predetermined rate of value. And that value is something that's agreed upon between you and the one who is paying you according to what you deliver. If we took any other entity, let's say apples, let's say you agreed to sell somebody grade A apples at the rate of $40 per bushel. And that person didn't necessarily check in every day. And so after a while, you started mixing in some grade B apples, and that bushel got to be 3/4, maybe 7/8 of a bushel. The price stayed at $40 a bushel. We would say, well, that's cheating, right? That's very simple. We would all agree that's cheating. And yet, how many times do we just kind of do that? We don't give our best. We tend to get by with what we can get by with. If nobody's there goading us on, telling us to get after it, stick at our work, then we find ourselves in a corner doing something else. It's really no different than selling apples. You're selling time. Are you providing the value that you agreed to? Are you pushing for excellence every day? If you're working with others, you are accountable to them as well as your employer to do your best. If you're part of a team and you're not doing your part, you are creating a deficit. And when there is a deficit, if performance is to remain static or improve, somebody else has to fill in the hole. And whenever that happens, other people are either working more hours, costing your employer more time, or quality is going to have to go down. And so we are accountable to others because we are affecting their compensation as well. You know, if you've ever been on a team where you've had to compensate for a lazy or uninspired coworker, you know that that type of behavior is like a cancer in an organization. It eats away at the morale, it destroys the camaraderie, it lowers efficiency, it lowers profitability, and it will spread if not aggressively dealt with. You have an accountability to your customers. You've agreed to provide them a product at a price, whether you're working on contract or time and material. But they are trusting you to provide value per hour and trusting you to be judicial with the amount of time that you spend on their dollar. I'm accountable to you this morning. You came here today thinking, hoping, that you would get some return on the value that you or your employer put into you being here today. And so you expect that whoever stands up here and does the teaching is going to have to put a reasonable amount of preparation into content and delivery. We're compelled to do our best because we are not an island unto ourselves. Those we work with and those we work for are counting on us to be the best we can be. We do our best because it gives us personal fulfillment. The sleep of a laboring man is sweet, and that is not just because he's tired, it's because he's also fulfilled. We often shy away from expressing too much satisfaction in a job well done because, well, we want to stay away from a sense of pride, right? And that's good. However, God has designed our minds to be goal-oriented and goal-rewarded. And so when we complete a task, when we do a good job, our bodies trigger a dopamine release. It's a natural feel-good chemical. It makes you want to do more of that. Lack of dopamine makes you tired, gives you depression, lack of motivation. It's a chemical that God has designed to reinforce good behavior. So I believe it's healthy to take a bit of time to inspect and appreciate a well-done task, and whatever that is for you, whether it's that perfectly fitted corner joint or that well-designed and meticulously installed landscape feature that just flows with nature, or maybe it's that exquisitely executed shift sequence of a loaded truck on a steep hill. Whatever it is that gets your juices flowing, appreciate it, enjoy it, and then get back to work and do better the next time. When God created the world, he took a moment to step back, observe his work, and he declared it good. And he declared it good because it perfectly fulfilled the intentional design and the harmony and purpose of his nature. So if God, the creator of all, who does all things perfectly, can take pleasure in a task well done, I would suggest it's his intention that we follow his example and enjoy the fruits of our labor as well. Your best informs your opportunity. How many of you here are under the age of, let's say, 35? I can't put my hand up for that one. Of those of you that raised your hand, how would you respond if I told you that in 15 years you would be doing the exact same thing for the exact same employer in the exact same role at the exact same place for the exact same inflation-adjusted wage? Now how many of you are happy? We got one person that'd like that. Well, I talked earlier about the God-given motivation to exceed and grow, and this is healthy. As an employer, I welcome the problem of an employee who outgrows his position. You know, your performance is key to your promotion. It's the biblical principle of he who is faithful in least is faithful in much. So your performance will shape your opportunity. It'll build your reputation. It'll demonstrate your potential. It'll give you more visibility at an organization or in your workspace. It'll open up more training opportunities. It'll highlight your strengths. It'll give you confidence, and it will help you achieve more. Poor performance, on the other hand, that's going to limit you in all these areas. And when the time comes for promotions, raises, greater opportunity, you'll see others pass you up. That has more to do with your performance than anybody else on the job. Performance is a key factor to your compensation. Most of the industries we have represented here today, I would suspect that a strong paycheck is very achievable. And while we don't just work for money, the fact is that a paycheck does play a huge role in our employment decisions. And so it follows that an increase in efficiency and performance by you will naturally create more income for your employer. And that should trickle down. I hope it trickles down. If it doesn't, that's probably a discussion you need to have with an advisor or your employer. You know, many of us start out in the job market with this dream of someday owning our own business. And while that's not for everybody, that is largely a healthy motivation. And in my experience, we've had the joy of hiring several young men who came into the job market very green, and we've worked with them over the years, and we've watched them go on and start their own enterprise. And that's a little bittersweet. It's sweet because you want to see them succeed, you want to see them grow, they become almost like family. And it's bitter because you always hate to lose a good employee. That's rough. But I can tell you with absolute certainty, in watching our employees and in help working with others, that those who make the best employees make the best business owners. Because the qualities that made it so hard to see them go serve them very well in their next phase of life. The opposite is also tragically true. Those who need constant outside motivation and need direction in every detail, I can promise you, you will have a rude awakening one day when that outside motivation comes from impassionate customers and creditors. How do we do this? How do we achieve our best? Well, the title says, bringing the best you. So my first point is, bring it. Arrive on time. What does on time mean? 5 minutes before, on the dot, 5 minutes after. What is your definition of on time? This seemingly simple practice is a hurdle to way too many people, and in speaking with other business owners, it's near the top of the list of frustrations with just about everybody with employees. And I can assure you, the list of reasons people get to work late would make a great creative writing class. I was speaking with an older Amish friend of mine here a while back who, in the course of his career, has hired maybe over 300 people, I know. And he rated this at one of the top of his list of frustrations. And he made this comment. He said, I think I've heard just about every excuse there is for getting to work late, except one. He said, I'm still waiting for somebody to tell me that they got so wrapped up in their personal devotions that they lost track of time. And that one hasn't come up. It's a bad habit. So how do we break this habit? Well, it takes resolve. It takes discipline. Perhaps it'll take some type of an accountability program from your employer. I can assure you no employer wants to start docking time for late arrival. But chronic tardiness is harmful because it sets such a poor tone for a day. So what can you do? Well, be a time budgeter. Create some margins in your schedule. You know how what time you need to be at work. You know how long it takes to get to work. You know how long it takes to do your morning routine. So you know when to get out of bed, right? The problem is we operate in this little bubble called optimism bias. And optimism bias simply states that we assume that everything will go smoothly. Everything never goes smoothly. And the more responsibilities you get in life, the more opportunities for things to not go smoothly arise. So create some margins in your schedule. Maybe get up a little earlier, shorten up your routine, but figure something out in order to get to work on time. If the worst thing that happens is if you show up 5 minutes early, I can assure you your employer will work with you on that. And when you get there, arrive with purpose. Be ready to work. If it takes 16 grams of protein and 8 grams of caffeine, or vice versa, to get you fueled up, then fuel up before you show up. The employee that shows up at work and has to put his gas station burrito in the microwave and chug an energy drink and take a 5-minute bathroom break before he's productive is just as bad or worse than one that shows up 15 minutes late. So plan to be productive. Set the stage the night before. You'll be amazed at how much more fulfilling it is and how much more you get done if you can jumpstart your day by having something profitable to do immediately when you show up, rather than having to rev it up when you get there in the morning. Be careful about frequent extracurricular activities that lower your productivity. In our area, we have bow fishing, which is done at night in the summer, and we have predator hunting, which is done at night in the winter. And then you have that truck you're building in the garage. You have these other projects, you have these side hustles, and these are all good. Maybe you're building a house. Did it myself at night. It's a great nighttime activity. But is it fair to subject your coworkers and your employer to you walking around like a zombie all day because you have bad nocturnal habits? Be cheerful. Even if you're not a morning person, there's no reason to subject others to your lack of civility. In fact, be aggravatingly cheerful. Be that person that other people can hardly handle in the mornings because you're just so upbeat. Set goals high. Maybe you'll get at least partway there. And when you do show up, on time, inspired, well-rested, chomping at the bit, then what? We're going to spend a little more time on this one. And this is, we develop it. We're going to look at this in two different ways. We're going to first look at some... We're going to first look at some principles, we'll call it, for development, and then we'll look at some practical applications. So first of all, we develop. How do we develop? We develop through learning. So learn how you learn. Everybody learns in one of three particular ways. You either learn through visual, seeing, auditory, which is hearing, or kinesthetic, which is doing. So learn how you learn. If you don't know how you learn, do a little research on that and figure it out. And communicate that with whoever is in charge of instructing you, training you in on a new job or a new skill. And just say, can I watch you go through that a few times? I'm a visual learner. I learn by seeing. Tell me how it's done clearly. I learn by hearing. Or can we work together at it? I learn by doing. If you know how you learn, you will become a more effective learner. Learn what motivates you. There are a lot of things that motivate people, but there's two main categories of motivation. There is internal and external motivation. If you're an internally motivated person, we call those people commonly self-motivated. These are folks who find satisfaction in a sense of fulfillment in a job well done, a goal reached, a purpose fulfilled, or just doing something out of curiosity. They wonder if it'll work. And they thrive on the internal reward, such as the feeling of accomplishment or reaching that goal or fulfilling that commitment. And then you have people who are externally motivated. They work for a paycheck, for a raise, for a bonus, for the commendation of others, or in some cases, to avoid a penalty. And those types of people, they want something that's more tangible or physical in their reward. And there's really nothing wrong with either one of these or nothing more right about either one of these. But if you know what motivates you, it makes you more effective in, my next point, setting goals. And setting goals is very important. Why does it matter? Well, When we use the knowledge of how we learn and what motivates us to set goals for ourselves, we are much more likely to set attainable goals and goals that others, that will benefit us and be the benefit of others. And then, so write these things down. Ask others to hold you accountable. Put a time frame on it. Say, I am going to be at this point by this date. It's much more effective than just hoping to get there someday. Learn to take initiative. Edward referred to this in the opening of people who make things happen, people who watch things happen, and people who wonder what just happened. Be the former, not the latter. There's one technique that I've found that I like to use in helping others or in self-developing skills myself, and that is called the OODA loop. I'm going to share with you a little bit about the OODA loop this morning. The OODA loop is a powerful and a very broadly effective decision-making process. It was created by the U.S. Air Force to help people make faster, more effective, more informed decisions, and by cycling through four steps. You observe, you understand the situation, you orient, you process the information, you decide, you select a course of action, and you act, you execute it. And we do this intuitively, we do it instinctively. But you know, there is a value in taking some of these God-given instincts and reactionary processes and breaking them down and being intentional with their application where we may need to improve. Let's do a very simple OODA loop here. I have a ball. And I'm going to toss this ball out and we're going to ask somebody to catch it. There you go. That was an OODA loop. Very simple. He observed. He saw the ball. Saw me through the ball. He oriented. He gauged its speed. He gauged its trajectory. He decided. His brain said, snatch that thing out of the air. And then he caught it. He acted. Very simple. Let's make it a little more complicated. Let's say you're a landscaper. I notice there's a lot of Seven Oaks guys here today. I know your boss a little bit, so I'm going to pick on you. Now, I don't know what all types of landscaping you do, but I am going to suppose today, for illustration purposes, that your job is to go out to a series of office buildings and freshen up the landscaping, maybe replace some mulch, trim some bushes, and so on. Say it's an annual contract. And you get a job somewhere throughout the day, and you notice that the boxwoods are starting to blight on the one flower bed. This wasn't in the plans for today. You make an observation. So you orient. You say, well, you know what? We're 40 minutes from the shop. There's a garden store half mile down the road. You decide the most efficient course of action is to do something now while you're on site, and you don't have to worry about it later. And so you act. You run down to Acme Garden Center. You buy some copper sulfate and some fungicide. You come back. You spray the bushes. You replace the mulch. Sprinkle in some copper sulfate. And you solve the problem. You get back to the yard, and you hand Dave the credit card receipt, whoever your boss is, the credit card receipt for $39 for copper sulfate and fungicide, and you explain what you did. And you know, if he doesn't appreciate you saving him money, then you orient that this man doesn't appreciate my hard work. You observe that there's lots of other people out there that would like to have an employee of my caliber. I'll let you finish that one. Ask for feedback. This is important. You know, we view ourselves from a pretty optimistic point of view. We need feedback from others to get a realistic look at ourselves. Ask questions like, how can I? How do I? How did I? And ask out of sincerity and a desire to learn and grow, not from a platform of humble bragging or seeking credit. Be clear that you are seeking critique for growth. Tell the person you're asking, I want to hear criticism, not praise. I need to grow. And then be open and non-defensive with the mindset in order to genuinely learn from the input that you solicit. And then ask for reviews, ask for updates. Say, hey, check in with me, let me know how I'm doing. Learn to embrace failure. You know, we don't fail for the sake of failing, but failure will inevitably come. And when failure comes, we need to learn to embrace the lessons it has for us. Failure always offers opportunity. If nothing else, you just figured out something else that doesn't work, right? But look at failure as a blessing. Failure is a catalyst for innovation, for empathy, for growth, for persistence, for creativity. You know, it's your response to failure that determines whether or not you will grow. Development and growth is not done overnight. Rather, it's achieved by doing a little more, and a little more. It's like building muscle. It's like creating endurance. It's like learning a new habit. You know, our bodies build muscle through a process called hypertrophy. And hypertrophy is simply whenever you, through resistance, make microscopic tears in your muscle tissue. And then your body triggers a response where it builds more robust tissue in order to replace the tissue that you tore. And you get bigger muscles. So if we're going to grow, we want to become stronger personally, we need to accept the fact that you need to face some resistance, some trials, some struggles. And the way you respond will ultimately be the measure of your growth. What are some practical areas? Well, be self-aware. Show up at work dressed and groomed in a professional manner. You are a brand ambassador for whoever you work for. This is especially true if you are consumer-facing. Be respectful of the space of those who work around you. Be sensitive that you don't create an unpleasant environment around you with poor hygiene practices. Be respectful of the workplace, the tools, the personal belongings of your coworkers. Ask before you borrow, and then return in the same condition that you got something in. Don't be that person who the rest of the team automatically suspect when there's tools left lay out overnight, when there's a big oil spill on the floor, when it looks like an explosion happened in the microwave, whenever there's tools missing, whenever the entire case of soda disappears in one afternoon. These might seem like painfully practical things, but I've been an employee and employer long enough to know that there's one in every crowd, so just make sure it isn't you. Respect others' time when you're on the clock. Remember the concept we had of selling time? Well, when you engage other employees, your fellow workers, in horseplay and foolishness, you are compounding that theft. Because not only are you not performing, now you're causing other people to not be productive as well. There does need to be some exchange and some camaraderie on the job. You do need to communicate as you work, but be careful to keep it upbuilding, keep it profitable, and while you're on the clock, try to keep it job-centric. Be careful not to get caught up in the ever-escalating spiral of practical jokes. If you've got a competitive nature at all, you've got to one-up. You've got to one-up. And these are time wasters at best, harmful and expensive at worst, almost guaranteed to become expensive if not harmful. What about phones and pads and electronic use? Well, Forbes magazine did a study in 2023 that estimated on average an employee spends 1.4 out of every 8 hours in non-productive time on some type of an electronic device. And I do choose to believe and sincerely hope that that number would be dramatically lower in this room. However, we're not exempt. These devices that many of us carry on our person every waking hour of the day have more computing power than the most capable consumer gaming console did in 2012. It's a tremendous opportunity. It's a tremendous responsibility. These tools have the power to make us more efficient and more productive than was even imagined a generation or two ago. These toys had the capability to corrupt our minds and waste our time more than was ever even imagined a generation or two ago. And that is why most workplaces have been forced to develop some type of guidelines for electronic uses. So first and foremost, know what your regulations are and follow the guidelines that are in place. Keep personal communication to a minimum. And I know this becomes more and more difficult as our rapidly escalating communication lifestyle goes on, and as those lines become increasingly blurred with remote work and that type of thing. But perhaps one test you could put it to is ask yourself this question. Would I be content if my employer required that I spend as much of my personal time doing work on my device as I spend doing personal work on my, as I spend doing personal things on my device on work time. Respect the convictions and church regulations of your coworkers. Do not be a stumbling block to one who may be part of a group that takes a more cautious approach to technology by sharing what may be objectionable to them in their settings. And vice versa. If you have coworkers who have devices that are less restricted or have more open internet than you are particularly allowed to use, then don't go beyond the limits of what is allowed in your setting. Keep your personal devices personal. That's private space. Stay out of others' private digital space. It may be best to use password access or even require multiple users on shared devices. It's all part of accountability and responsible use. If you use pads or phones for work orders, time clocks, task management, logistics, be careful about taking that 30 seconds to check an email, a social media post, or a text message. 30 seconds can so quickly turn into a bunny trail. And I can guarantee you one thing about bunny trails, they go straight to rabbit holes. We need to maintain it. How do we maintain it? Well, it's rewarding to be at the top of your game. How do you stay there? Lou Holtz, he's a favorite inspirational figure of mine. He's on his deathbed today. But he once said, it's not the load that breaks you, it's how you carry it. In Southern Illinois, where I'm from, folks will often tell you as you're leaving somewhere to pace yourself. It's sort of a parting word. And it simply means regulate yourself to a speed that you don't burn out before you're done. Think of a long-distance runner, marathon runner. There are several factors that come into play for setting a pace that allows us to perform at a consistent level. We must understand, first of all, our ability, our capacity, and then the extent of the task that we're called to do. Most people reach a stage in life, usually around middle age, where the responsibilities and obligations start to feel somewhat overwhelming. Benjamin Franklin once said, if you want something done, you ask a busy person to do it. And that's true. But you know, we usually err on the side of not saying no often enough. And we get so busy that we never really do our best at anything because we're just awfully busy being mediocre at everything. And the fact is, we're not all created with the same physical or mental capacities. Our abilities will change over time. You know, there's some jobs that are young man's game. There's some jobs that take wisdom that's only gained through many years of experience. So understanding your capabilities and being content to work with within your capabilities is key to maintaining a level of excellence. There's no shame in having a physical disability that might limit your ability to do strenuous physical labor. There's no shame in having a learning ability that might create a ceiling for you in skilled labor. The shame is when you take the gifts that God has given you and you do not use them to their potential because you are not doing your best and you're not inspired to serve others. So if we're going to maintain our best, we must be in a line of work that allows us to effectively maintain the use of the abilities that we have. And if you're in a job where you feel like you're constantly running up against it and burning out and not attaining, or a job where you're way overperforming, it's important that for your own sense of fulfillment that you find a task or job that you can work with that will allow you, that works to your potential. And so have that conversation with an advisor. Contentment is a prerequisite in maintaining excellence. And you might say, wait a minute, you've just been telling us to get better, raise the bar, keep pounding, go up the ladder. What does contentment have to do with that? And it's a good question. The key is to understand the difference between complacency and contentment. Maybe the best way to illustrate that is this. Our family really enjoys hiking. And where we're from, we're in relatively flat ground. Our hikes go like this. Around here, hikes go more like this. But the last couple summers, we've had the opportunity to spend some time in the Sierra Nevada and the Northern Rockies and do some serious elevation hikes. We've enjoyed them tremendously. But you know, when you're on an elevation hike, you take a different pace than you do when you're flat grounding. And you have to find a pace and sustain a pace that is manageable. And so you climb, and you stop, and you enjoy the view, and you rest because you must, but you keep on climbing. And your pace slows down, but you keep on climbing. And then after a while, you get to the top. And it's a little bittersweet. because you've attained your goal, but the joy was in the journey. You are content, not complacent. Complacency says, I didn't leave anything on top of that mountain. I ain't going up there. I'll be right here when you get back. That's complacency. Contentment finds joy in the journey, as well as motivation and satisfaction in the job well done. Maintaining your best requires a flexible and adaptable mindset that embraces the increases and the decreases in their expectations and responsibilities of life. And so when the time inevitably comes, when your employer, your spouse, your children tell you it's time to back off, to slow down, to accept something less strenuous, then it's time to take some of that wisdom that you've accrued over the years and listen to them. And that's easy to say when you're still in the prime of life, I know. But it's about consciously accepting natural limitations and declining abilities that will come in life with grace and not with defeat. Finally, we do our best when we multiply it. I'm going to use a sports reference here. There's three major league sports that I'm aware of that track something called the assist: hockey, basketball, and soccer. And the assist, the person who gets that stat, is simply the person who sets up the person who scores the goal. Now, you need goals. Goals win games. But you need assist in order for the goal scorer to score. And what fascinates me is this statistic. In the last 30 years, you take a snapshot of those three sports, and if you have the league assist leader on your team, you are 64% more likely to win a league championship than if you have the league goal scorer, the leading goal scorer on your team. So what does that tell us? Don't just score. Be the reason others score as well. Be an assist leader. Look for opportunities to help others. If you have knowledge or a tip that'll make somebody else's job easier, share it. You know, so often we get a little bit afraid of helping other people too much for fear that they will somehow surpass us. But when the team wins, we all win. Give that word of encouragement. Praise somebody else. Be sincere about it. And when the assist needs to come your way, accept it. Builds a mutual sense of dependency and trust with your coworkers. Look out for your fellow workers' best interest. Be that listening ear. Be that mentor when opportunity allows. So many times it's when you help others that you discover those shortcomings in yourself that you can grow in as well. Ministering to the needs of those around you is the greatest opportunity for growth you may ever discover. And when we grow by helping others, we compound growth and we multiply growth. I asked the question at the beginning, what is the best that we're looking for? Will all this make us our best? In Exodus 3 and 4, God is calling Moses to a monumental task, one of the biggest jobs a single man has ever been given in leading this vast nation of Israel out of Egypt. And Moses was naturally a little reluctant. And he's conversing with God and giving God lots of reasons why this is a bad idea. And God asks Moses a question. He says, "What is that in thine hand?" And I picture Moses looking a little incredulously at his hand, and he says, "Well, it's a rod." "Well, what's a rod?" "It's a cylindrical piece of wood. It's a stick." That's what a rod is. But God asked Moses to take that rod and commit the use of that rod to his will and purpose. And over the next days, months, years, that rod, that simple tool, became Moses' greatest weapon. Moses' rod confounded the magicians of Egypt. He stuck that rod in the Nile, and the water turned to blood, and the life in the Nile died. He struck the ground, and the dust turned to lice. He raised that rod to the heavens, and hail fell and destroyed the land. He pointed that rod toward the land of Egypt, and locusts came and ate every green thing. He stretched that rod over the Red Sea, and the waters parted, and the Israelites crossed on dry ground. He turned around and did it again, and the waters closed back over the armies of the Egyptians and destroyed the army. He struck the rock at Horeb to produce fresh water for a nation drying at thirst, and then he did it again at Kadesh. He held that rod up at the battle of the Amalekites, and the Israelites prevailed. That simple, round stick of wood became a symbol of authority, a tool of miracles, and a weapon of war. It was a stick. It was just a stick. And so I ask you today, what is that in thine hand? Is it a joystick, a gear shift lever, a keyboard and mouse, a trowel, a hammer, a shovel? What is in your hand? You know, if you take everything you hear today and you apply it, you'll probably do all right. But if you dedicate that tool and your abilities and your calling to God, it will be so much more. And the power and the influence of your work will be multiplied far beyond your imagination, your abilities, or your expectations. And then, and only then, will you be at your best. May God bless.